Right now, I am extremely pleased to welcome a guest to Lineup Logic, the editor of the Read Optional Baseball online publication. If you haven't checked it out, please check it out, robaseball.com. That's one word, robaseball.com. Casey Bogislaw, defining the why behind baseball. He's also one of the managing forces behind the MLB Barrel Alert Twitter account and the publisher of the Daily Barrel Fit Pitcher Sheet. I don't know. What do you call it, Casey?
Yeah, Barrel FIP leaderboards is what I post at robaseball.com every day, but Barrel FIP is kind of the stat that I've ran away with here for since the season started.
Yeah, and it has been an absolute absolute gem, especially in the, I think, in the fantasy baseball world, which is kind of how I stumbled into your account. So, you know, first of all, thank you for coming on, and thank you for publishing the Barrel FIP leaderboard, and thanks for all the information that you're providing to, like, the Twitter baseball community. I mean, it's been awesome to see.
No problem. I'm here to serve.
So I guess the first question I have for you is how did you find yourself at RO? Have you always been a baseball writer? Are you a full-time baseball writer? Or what's your history as far as, you know, baseball and getting into these advanced metrics and where you're at now?
Actually, I haven't been in it too long now. I'd say a few years here. I've gotten into writing, started over in basketball, wrote a little bit on college basketball. It's probably my second most loved sport to baseball. But baseball has always kind of been near and dear to my heart ever since I was, you know, very, very little. And baseball is kind of where I found myself back at this point in my life. And I just decided that I really wanted to devote more of my time to it. You know, my favorite team is the White Sox, and they've had some down years this last half decade. So I did want to branch out and watch a little bit more of some of the other teams, maybe, you know, give myself a little bit more entertainment. But yeah, RO Baseball started last July, and you mentioned the full name Read Optional. So Read Optional was a football site started by a friend of mine who lives in the United Kingdom, and he has a very big following as kind of the American football guru over in London. And he's a wonderful, wonderful football writer. His name is Ali Connolly. I highly recommend if for football fans to go check him out. But he started Read Optional maybe about 2 years ago, and I was friends with him. I wrote at a baseball site that he started before that. He had to kind of kick that one to the curb when the football started getting bigger, but I always kind of bugged him to start a chapter of Read Optional for baseball. And finally, he gave me the opportunity to go ahead and more or less start it from scratch. And we've grown since, you know, we're approaching our just 1 year anniversary, but we've grown leaps and bounds, and we have a lot of great writers over at the site. The majority of us are analytically inclined from the baseball world, but we feature a bunch of other different voices too. We got some guys that are more into the history of baseball, some guys that are more into even, like, you know, fun stuff like comparing jerseys and stuff. So it's not incredibly stat 100% focused, but I would say that it definitely leans that way, especially if you're reading anything from me.
Yeah, and the beauty of RO Baseball, guys, if you haven't checked it out, it's, I mean, the consistency with which you guys are publishing things that are up to date and well written and engaging and interesting and not just you know, run of the mill type stuff. You're always going to find a story over there. I find myself just kind of drifting from story to story to story, keep seeing headlines that are engaging and very readable, very, very consumable, a wonderful publication. So you guys are doing great work over there. The other thing that I'm absolutely in love with is obviously the MLB Barrel Alert Twitter account. You know, I get these push notified all the way to my phone constantly throughout the night, keeping a track on what's going on in baseball. Where did you come up with that idea?
So yeah, obviously we'll dive a little bit more into this moving forward. But when the Statcast guys over at MLB Advanced Media created this term "barrel" that defined you know, the best segmented portion of batted balls, I fell in love with it immediately, and that was towards the end of the season last year. And I did a whole bunch of just studies on different things with barrels, and kind of you know, made it my thing over the offseason. I wrote a series of articles that, again, are published at robaseball.com. And even if you have the Medium app, and I'll give Medium a little pub, they allow series publications to post. So if you search me under Medium, you'll see that I have a barrel series in there. So, yeah, I just kind of went a little bit crazy with it. I talked to Mike Petriello, who was one of the inventors on the RO Baseball podcast, and talked to him a lot about it right after the barrels were created. And I told him how wonderful. I thought the term was very, very, you know, it sounded great. It was very easy to understand what they were going with the term barrel and hitting it off the barrel of the bat. And anyone that's played baseball knows that sweet feeling when really you're feeling nothing because you hit the ball so pure that you barreled it. So it just immediately stuck to me, and I wanted to kind of make this thing my own. And then, it was only a couple weeks before the season. You know, I follow, you know, I'm sure you do, and most of your listeners follow MLB HR, MLB Home Run on Twitter, which alerts immediately of every home run. And I've been following that for a couple of years since they started, which is, you know, always great, and get push notifications for that. And you can make your fantasy moves quicker than your opponents when you do that. I thought, why wouldn't I do the same thing about with barrels? Because, you know, obviously not every single home run is a barrel. Not every single barrel is a home run. So there certainly is a, you know, a separate population of each, but barrels are incredibly important as well. So yeah, it was really only me and a buddy, MLB Random Stats, another good follower, he encouraged me to get this launched. It was almost a couple hours before the first pitch on opening day, and we said, let's go with it. So we started right away on that Sunday afternoon and started publishing our first barrel alerts of the season.
That's pretty awesome. It is absolutely a joy to follow. And I think, you know, you mentioned barrels. They're certainly one of the most, I think, approachable pieces of the StatCast data. You know, barrels, logically, you know, just I think it makes sense. You hear the word, you understand, you know, and I think the technical definition, if I'm correct, Casey, is a batted ball that has above a 500, above 500, correct? Like, based on angle and exit velocity and the way it's stroked. Is that correct?
So that's a very good way of defining it. Really what they did was they wanted to find a population of batted balls that were on average over 500 batting average and over 1500 slugging. So they wanted that extra base. They wanted that almost definite extra base hit. So last year, I believe, batting average on barrels was like 820. I have it right in front of me right now. For this season, it's 790. So it's a little bit down for whatever reason. Maybe, I mean, I would theorize that, you know, and we can get into why barrels are so great. But, you know, even when you do hit a barrel in these early months of the season when it's still cold outside, they still won't travel as far. So maybe that's why the batting average is a little bit lower on them. But, you know, even with, you know, we're talking about an 800 average here, you're 80% likely to get a hit if you're hitting it with these combinations of exit velocity and launch angle.
Which is just, I think, this beautiful, you know, combination of, you know, sports and science and the way that baseball does that. And StatCast in particular is, you know, I think it's relatively new to the kind of traditional baseball fan. I mean, it launched, I believe it was 2015. What else is beyond barrels? You know, if you can just give our listeners a better sense of what StatCast is measuring beyond barrels and in some of the other advanced batted ball data, what is StatCast bringing to the game that, you know, you're attracted to, that you find interesting as far as data on baseball players?
Yeah, so what really draws me to it is the science behind it, you know, the science behind the batting ball. And I'll even bring it down to, you know, bring it back to, you know, when we grew up, you know, you always saw pitch velocity on the screen, and we saw Nolan Ryan throw 100 and Randy Johnson throw 102 or whatever it was. But no one ever talked about how fast the ball was coming off the bat the other way. And there was never anyone was measuring that. But, you know, I always thought about it in the back of my head. Maybe it wasn't something that I was consciously thinking. But, you know, when you saw a that ball hit very, very hard, you know, it's kind of like, well, how hard was that hit if the pitch came in at 100 miles per hour? So what StatCast has done, and you're right, they introduced it in 2015 is when it was in all – the camera system behind it was put in all 30 stadiums, and they started – publishing some of those numbers, and then last year is when it really took off, and it became prevalent in the lexicon of, you know, they used it a lot on MLB Network. They had these StatCast game broadcasts where they really broke down everything, every single play that you could kind of simultaneously watch that with one of the game broadcasts. So it goes down to the science where we're looking at velocity and angle off the bat, and those things you can't cheat. So, you know, everyone talks about the different, you know, luck factors in the game of baseball, whether it's, that a pitcher can only control when there's a strikeout and a walk or a home run. Well, you know, there's a lot to that too. You know, the Coors Field effect, which is kind of what everyone knows about, is that the balls fly further in Coors. Well, if you look at just the science of where the ball was hit, it doesn't matter what stadium you're at. So yeah, it will go further at Coors, but you're not really getting into exactly what the batter accomplished on that exact event. So yes, he may have hit a home run at Coors, but if you would have put him in Comerica Park in Detroit, that might have been a fly out to the warning track. And if we want to look at all these players on as even playing ground as we can, which is kind of that's the idea behind baseball statistics, StatCast is the thing that finally got down to. We don't have to use like averages anymore. You know, home runs per fly ball was something right. That was normalized throughout the sport, and we kind of used that instead of because that was the best we had. We had to use, well, if he's hitting 25% of his fly balls are going for home runs, that's way above the norm, and we can theorize that was going to go down. However, now we know exactly that Aaron Judge right now is hitting the ball incredibly hard at a ideal angle that regardless of what ballpark he is in, he's going to be hitting home runs. Coors, Comerica, we can tell just by those two measurement factors what exactly he is doing up at the plate.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me. I mean, the evaluation process of a hitter then becomes pretty neutral. I mean, like you said, you can't cheat. There's not much luck involved in the way, the angle at which you're striking the ball, the exit velocity and the force with which you're striking the ball. There's not a lot of luck in that. And I think it neutralizes the data when we're looking at the quality of the hitters and evaluating them. On the reverse, do you think this gives us better data to evaluate pitchers with?
I do as well, for the same reason, because we do know exactly how much they're avoiding the barrel of the bat on the other way. And I've talked to, you know, people, you know, more advanced than I am in the physics behind baseball. And I've asked them straight up, is this sustainable? Can a pitcher sustain missing barrels as much as a hitter can, or maybe one over the other? And they right now believe that it is pretty even, that a hitter can miss barrels just as well as a hitter can create barrels. So Kyle Hendricks was kind of, I think, the poster child of where my brain wheels started spinning last year. Living in Chicago, I get the, you know, every single Cubs broadcast, so I watched quite a bit of Kyle Hendricks, even though I'm a White Sox fan. But, you know, his numbers were off the charts, but then when you looked at some of the peripherals, like his strikeout rate, a lot of people were saying that he was getting very lucky. And, of course, the Cubs defense certainly fell into that too. But when I watched Kyle Hendricks pitched, I said that the opposing batters were not hitting the ball hard off of him last year. Every single thing was a weak grounder, a weak pop-up. And they didn't, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of metrics that were readily available. You know, if you went across all of the, you know, the great stuff that Fangraphs shows, it was hard to really catch what Kyle Hendricks was doing. And I think that with the StatCast metrics that we use, now we can more see exactly what Kyle Hendricks did last year. Another stat that they just came out with that they're really pushing is expected weighted on base average. So what they're doing is every single batted ball now has a expected impact based on historical, the history behind every batted ball with those metrics. So we could see that if Kyle Hendricks was creating 25% weak contact, that's now included in his overall profile using this expected wOBA. And I know that it's a big mouthful. I do think that my barrel fit works nice in hand with that, and I think it's maybe a little bit easier to explain and maybe a little bit easier to sustain. But we can get into that a little bit more in detail if you want later.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in my mind, one of the points here where, you know, me as the fantasy analyst, who, you know, just kind of just on the fan side of things, merges with you and a lot of the other advanced world of baseball, is, you know, trying to figure out how kind of everyday baseball fans or fantasy baseball players, which is, you know, a massive emerging market. It's not an emerging market, it's here, but the fantasy world is here to stay as far as you know, all the major sports in the US. I guess the question is, you know, what of this data for first timers, for fantasy baseball players, for regular guys who don't wade in all this interesting stuff on a daily basis, what do you think that they can gain? What's the most approachable stuff when you're looking at the StatCast data? I think the barrel is number one, right up there. But beyond that, what do you think that fantasy baseball players and regular fans can learn from this stuff?
Well, what's great about it is if you're hitting the ball hard, or if you're, if we want to look at it from the pitcher's perspective and avoiding hard ball contact, then things should start to regress, you know, either positively or negatively, depending on what's happened so far. So if we do look at a pitcher that's, you know, let's say he has a 5 ERA to start the season, but his barrels are way lower, maybe he is getting unlucky. Now, there's a couple things to always keep in mind with this. Now, if it is a Colorado Rockies pitch, I know I keep referencing Coors, that yes, a barrel is still going to travel further at Coors. But if that same pitcher is on the road, maybe it is somebody that you want to take a look at. I'm sure in the daily fantasy world, it's always highly recommended to avoid Coors Field, but we can kind of get in between those numbers and take out the Coors effect, and maybe you do want to start Tyler Chatwood on the road. Right. Same thing now for hitters. If they're hitting the ball hard and getting flyouts or even, you know, singles or doubles, we can learn that those, you know, it will eventually kind of get better if they're hitting the ball hard. Those home runs will come. Nick Castellanos had this crazy, crazy start of the season where he was leading the barrel world for a while, but he was like hitting, you know, 200 on barrels, which is just incredibly unsustainable. Of course, he plays in Comerica Park, though, so that is, I think, one of, if not the biggest, outfields in the entire league. So he will probably lose a little bit more. But again, when Castellanos goes on the road, let's say Castellanos did go play at Coors, you do want to pick up that guy. Certainly works for daily. But even in season leagues as well, you do want to take a look at maybe if a guy is hitting the ball really hard and not getting those great outcomes, you might go to the owner that has that player and take advantage of maybe he's only looking at those back of the baseball stats. This guy has no home runs, but Hanley Ramirez was sticking out for a while, and I wrote an article about him that I expected a Hanley Ramirez turnaround, and then it came. He was hitting a bunch of barrels that were turning into flyouts, but then he started hitting home runs, and that's really the not cheating the barrel thing is very important. But also, I believe that if you are finding good contact, that is sustainable. Now, I will say that I'm not sure how long sustainability will stay in play, and I am looking into that. I'm going to do more studies as I get more advanced in this. And like we mentioned, there's only 2 years of this data available. The 2015 data gets a little sticky in places. That's why I messed around a lot with the 2016 data last year. But even 2017, as this, this is still the StatCast system is still in its infancy. So even the guys, that are running it still probably have some kinks to work out. But I do think that, right now we do have the correct data that we're looking at. And now is the time to have fun with it and see what really can be used for predictability reasons and for, of course, all the fantasy players out there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And identifying the kind of the quality of a player's individual skill outside of the situation You know, an understanding, you know, that baseball does involve a certain degree of luck and situation and all that kind of thing. And when you can, as you said, I think this is really a good way to put it, like find your way in between those stats and find, you know, the gaps in where people are understanding players. You know, Hanley Ramirez having a down year because he's a little bit cold or a little bit slow getting off the ground in April, it means that he's probably primed for regression as long as he's striking the ball at that angle and that velocity, as you mentioned. So let's talk about this 2017 season. And, you know, you're looking at these charts, this data on a regular basis. Are there any names of pitchers or performers who right now, as far as, you know, the quality of a starting pitcher that has really caught your eye as far as just being very impressive this year in 2017?
I think the name that we have to start with is Jason Vargas, just because he's putting up these otherworldly numbers and he's kind of came out of nowhere because he didn't pitch last season at all, you know, recovering from an injury. And now he's putting up these incredible numbers, and I'm sure a common question that's being asked all around the sport is this for real? Well, right now the barrel numbers do prove that everything that he is doing is for real. He has a 1.1% barrel rate allowed, which is incredible. You know, not many pitchers are anywhere near that. Clayton Kershaw's at 3.72, which is still very, very good, but Vargas has been that much better. The only pitcher that really is on his level right now is Chris Sale. Now, Chris Sale, we all believe in because we've seen him do it year in, year out. Jason Vargas is this brand new name. I highly recommend you to, you know, if you own him in a season league or if you've been playing him a lot in a daily league, keep doing it. Now, today he faces the Yankees. The Yankees' offense has been very good and have that Aaron Judge guy in the lineup. It's a good test for him, but I'm going to believe in him still. You know, it's kind of to the point where he's shown this now for, you know, I think it's 8 starts. It's not the biggest sample size in the world, but he's getting it done. He's, like I was talking about before, he's really doing it by missing the barrel of the bat. His strikeout percentage, not incredibly good. His walk rate is very good as well. So even when he is allowing those very, very few barrels, there is not too many people on base. So I'm going to continue to believe in that guy.
Yeah.
Let's go with Rick Porcello. Rick Porcello got off to this really horrible start. And obviously, as the reigning AL Cy Young Award winner, it was weird to see those numbers. And especially because, you know, it was just a complete blow up. Now he's on the other side. And actually, he's on my leaderboard in the good way for the last 30 days. So for whatever reason, he has turned it around. Maybe it was just a bad start. But if you have dumped Porcello, or maybe somebody did drop Porcello in your league, I'd start to take a look at him again because he's been pitching a whole lot better. So that's where I get back to this sustainability thing. I do plan on, you know, I posted this morning, and I'll get into another pitcher. Patrick Corbin goes this afternoon here. I don't know if this podcast will be out, so you'll be able to make fun of me or think I'm a genius when I finish, or when you're listening to this podcast. But Patrick Corbin has had a 3.09 barrel FIP in the last 30 days. Now, I posted his game log for those last 30 days, and he did face the San Diego Padres twice and the Colorado Rockies twice. And despite the Rockies' really great start, their offense really hasn't been hitting if you look at the numbers. Again, they are helped by Coors a little bit, but maybe Corbin has gotten a little bit lucky with the opponents there that he's faced. So there's a whole bunch of numbers that go into it. I know you have to always take all of this in when you're researching your fantasy, but I'm going to try to do as much as I can from my account. So to try to catch in all these things, to try to explain if we are seeing these differentiating trends that come across throughout the season.
Well, and it's, you know, the idea is you try to make sure people are evaluating objectively. And that's the beauty of the numbers, is objectively Jason Vargas is getting it done. You know, all of the numbers and the advanced data is in his favor, but subjectively you think of a Royals pitcher who is on a terrible baseball team right now, going up against one of the most high powered offenses in the American League. And you kind of cringe at the idea of thinking about Jason Vargas against the Yankees. But like you said, you know, objectively, if we're trusting the numbers in the sample size, then I think we can continue to expect Jason Vargas to succeed. And, you know, I think the opposite side of this is, you know, you mentioned Aaron Judge, who has been just kind of a StatCast darling. Like, you know, he is the, if there is a name that will go hand in hand with barrels in the advent of the StatCast era, I feel like Aaron Judge will be that guy. You know, it's just kind of the exact same time that he emerges young in his career. This data is showing how good he is and how well he is striking the ball. I mean, we all have heard about Aaron Judge. We know about him. You know, he's in one of the biggest markets there is in baseball. Are there other names in baseball right now striking the ball that you were impressed with, you feel like are under the radar, guys that you feel like this is sustainable for?
Yeah, Aaron Judge, I just have to mention this stat because he's hitting barrels at 14.69% of his plate appearances right now.
Unbelievable.
It's incredible. I mean, it's nearly won a game. He has 21 on the season right now. So, and just to compare it, give you guys some point of reference here, last year, you know, David Ortiz, we all know, put up an amazing hitting season. He hit barrels at 11.5% throughout the season. He was number one in baseball, but Aaron Judge is doing that much better. I know it's 6 weeks into the season, but it puts it into perspective a little bit.
He's like 21, isn't he? Is he 20, 21? He's
21 barrels. Oh, age-wise, you're talking about.
I'm thinking of age.
Yeah, something like that, 23. And what's weird is, you know, his profile wasn't exactly this power hitter. I mean, I know that he is a behemoth, but he never really hits quite like this throughout the minors. Last year he came up and he struck out, I want to say, like 55% of the time or something like that in his September call up. This is really, really unexpected. But he's, you know, it's been very, very, he's been very even all season. And you know, I don't think that it's just a quick jump up. Now, pitchers may find certain ways to adjust to him, but right now, I mean, it seems as real as possible. I'll take Miguel Sano. This guy, you know, he does need to bring his strikeout rate a little bit, but in fantasy, we don't really care. I mean, I know some leagues might have a strikeout penalty, but he's hitting the ball incredibly well and still is probably a little bit of a lesser-known player. He's barreling 11.2% of the time. Chris Davis. Chris Davis is my guy. Chris with a K I'm talking about, though.
Yeah.
You certainly got to make that point. So here's a guy that, you know, his production right now doesn't exactly match his how great he's doing getting the barrel on the ball. So even last night's perfect example, and trust me, I have this guy in both my season leagues. He hit two barrels last night. They were very late at night. They were after I went to bed. So when I woke up, and again, I had those push notifications that said Chris Davis hit two barrels on my phone when I woke up. Then I looked and they were both flyouts. So, you know, that does happen. So right now, even looking at his WOBA is 331 and he's got 20 barrels. If you compare him to Aaron Judge with his 21 barrels, his WOBA is 470. There is some kind of a gap that Chris Davis has to make up there. I do believe that it will come. Continue to believe in Chris Davis.
Yeah, I mean, that positive regression is that is one of the sweetest things to find in fantasy. You know, Chris Davis definitely seems like he is due. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that once he gets a positive park, you know, playing That's in true. Oakland doesn't do a lot for a power hitter like him. But you know, once he gets a positive park in a situation, you know, a pitcher that gives up a lot of fly balls, you know, those are the moments when you really want to target Chris Davis, whether it's DFS or regular fantasy. All right, so let's talk a couple of the other hot point topics here. We just came out of, you know, just in baseball talk in general, because, you know, I want your opinion on this. In RO baseball, there's a lot of really good just general baseball talk, not fantasy baseball talk. But I think, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me, are the Astros the best team in the AL? Are they that bad? Are they that much better than the Yankees in your mind?
I still like the Indians quite a bit, okay. But I do think the Astros are pretty much head and shoulders above the rest of the American League right now. I do think that they are so deep. They have tons of flexibility as far as from the left and the right side of the plate, and they, that certainly goes. A lot of credit has to be given to their front office for making those changes that they did in the offseason to bring in a bunch of lefties for a very heavy right-handed hitting lineup. But it's the pitching that has to be talked about right now. You know, obviously, the Astros even got a ton of grief this offseason for not going out and getting the pitcher. They certainly flirted a lot with Jose Quintana and Chris Archer, and everyone thought that they needed that ace to kind of push them over the edge. Well, Dallas Keuchel became that ace again, and after a down 2016, which he, you know, there was certainly the injuries disclosed that may have been keeping his numbers down, he's back to being that Cy Young Award winner from 2015. Lance McCullers, we always kind of expected that he could be this type of pitcher. He's health has been his issue. He's missed a bunch of time for health, but that's as good of a 1-2 in any pitching rotation in all of baseball. But then it's, you know, Charlie Morton has come up as this third guy because Colin McHugh has been he hasn't made a start yet this season, but Charlie Morton was kind of picked up off the scrap heaps. They said that he was throwing 97 somehow in spring training, and everyone was kind of like, what, Charlie Morton throws 97? Well, I guess he's even up to 99 now this season, so Charlie Morton is definitely for real. Now, the other two spots in the rotation might be a little bit of a question mark, but I know I even saw this morning Ken Rosenthal posted an article that the Astros are already talking about going and getting another pitcher. Garrett Cole was the one mentioned in the article. They still have a deep, deep farm system, even with the guys that they've called up. And they have the wealth to make a move like that. So pitching, I think, should be great. And their pitching has been very great in barrel numbers as well. All three of those guys are at least they're on or at least near the top 25 in my barrel FIP leaderboard. I want to mention one thing here, though, Sean. What's really weird is that this has popped out to me. The Astros don't hit a lot of barrels. They are third to last in barrel percentage team-wise. Now, obviously, I don't think that this is necessarily going to be an Achilles heel for them. It could... What it really means is they might have a few more slap hitters than everyone. And even like Jose Altuve, who was his power hitter last year and hit a bunch of bombs, he hasn't been hitting as many bombs. I saw that he has two triples today, though. You know, he can be a slap hitter. Jose Altuve can really be any type of hitter you want him to be. Sure. So can George Springer. So can Carlos Correa. So these guys might be doing different things, taking what the defense is giving them right now, and might have that luxury because the lineup is so deep. They just need to get on base and wait for one guy to put one over the fence. They have a park that also is pretty conducive to some lesser exit velocity balls. I know that George Springer's had got a couple home runs over those Crawford boxes, which he kind of just puts up and over, and those aren't measuring as barrels, but they're certainly measuring as home runs still. But just something that has popped out to me, obviously, with the Astros being the best team in the American League and being at the bottom of the barrel leaderboard.
That's very interesting. Well, I mean, I think the other thing we have to remember is the speed of that lineup also puts a lot of stress on the base path. I mean, you know, Altuve is one of those rare hitters who, like you said, can kind of take what the defense gives him and stretch plays, you know, singles into doubles, doubles into triples. And that's what they do. They just all of a sudden you look up and they've put up eight runs and nobody's hit a home run, and they string together those extra base hits. I love that brand of baseball. Just kind of, They can make the wheels fall off for a pitcher real easily. Let's talk about a team that you probably, as a White Sox fan, have a lot of familiarity with, the Twins. And you mentioned, you know, Miguel Sano showing up. The Twins were, you know, a whipping boy last year. Just kind of just a sad state of affairs for the last couple of years up there in Minneapolis. But they've been very successful this year. I mean, do you feel like this is success? Is here to stay? Is this sustainable for this team?
This one, I don't know, because they're doing it a little bit with kind of unconventional means. Now, they have a great, great defense, especially outfield defense. I wrote a bunch of articles this offseason, some of them barrels related, some of them not, about outfield defense is really making the difference between a good team and a great team. Now, the Twins might be a good team, and they certainly were not a good team last year, but even going back to the year before when they kind of outkicked their expectations, and they stayed in the playoff hunts throughout the entire season, pretty much till the last week of the season.
Sure.
They're kind of back at that level now where it's kind of like, do we believe in this team or not? Irvin Santana is another name that I could have came up when you asked me what pitchers have certainly surprised the season. It all seems real so far. You know, he does have a 1.5 ERA, but his barrel FIP, I have it 3.5, which, you know, certainly shows some bit of regression is going to happen. This is Irvin Santana. We know who Irvin Santana is. He's not probably, you know, he's not Chris Sale. He's not Clayton Kershaw. So he is due for a little bit of regression, but he's missing bats. You know, he is walking a little bit, and I think that's why my barrel flip doesn't like him too much. As far as avoiding contact, and then even so, you know, let's take this another level. If Irvin Santana is not giving the hardest batted ball types to opposing hitters, and maybe they are even just a notch below, that means that that ball is staying in the ballpark, and that means that that amazing outfield led by, of course, their center fielder, Byron Buxton, is going to go get it. And that's right. What I'm talking about, making a good team great. If they have these three outfielders that can cover up so much ground, as long as their pitchers are keeping the ball in the ballpark, don't give up walks, they're going to be in every ball game. And then, you know, we talked about Miguel Sano. Brian Dozier had a little bit of a slow start, but, you know, the power is certainly there, and that could certainly come back. Byron Buxton's even starting to hitting. You know, he had that incredible, you know, horrible strikeout rate to start the season, but he's starting to hit the ball a little bit more. That lineup is becoming a little bit easier to believe in. And the AL Central, for whatever reason right now, is wide open, and they have certainly taken advantage, and they've gotten off to the best start in the division.
Yeah, it's impressive. You know, it's good when teams like that are good, you know, and I think, you know, they have some pieces that you can get excited for, you know, as Twins fans. You know, of course, Kenneth Vargas in there as well has shown some flashes of being a good power hitter. Now let's talk about a team, you know, and I don't know, the Cubs have been, you know, they're always in the news, and I'm sure you're getting a lot of the Cubs fear-mongering as April and May went around, and then they go out last night and they hit four dingers and they look like themselves. And a lot of people are saying, okay, they just needed the weather to turn, but they got bullpen problems. The starting rotation has not looked sharp, you know, but on the West Coast, we're talking about the Giants, another NL team that has just kind of looked dismal. I mean, the Giants have a way of hanging around and lingering and staying in the fight. But in your mind, I mean, which of these teams is in more danger? Is it the Cubs or the Giants? Who should be worried here?
It's definitely the Giants. I think there's no question about that. And of course, a big reason for that is the loss of Madison Bumgarner. I mean, he was the rock, and he was the guy who took the ball every 5 days. And even if they were on a 4-game losing streak, they would have full confidence that Bumgarner was going to win them the ball game. Now, he will come back eventually. And you said that they are sticking around a little bit. The Dodgers are a very, very good team. And of course, the Diamondbacks and Rockies have surprised. But I wouldn't be shocked if the Giants were able to come back in the fight, but you know, the rest of the team is still not all that good. And I know that Hunter Pence just went on the disabled list. That team always has problems with, it seems like they always have problems with staying healthy. Of course, they are an older team. You know, Buster Posey's up there in age. You know, Hunter Pence as well. You know, so it's hard to believe these, you know, they've already, those losses in April, even though they were in April, they still count for the whole season, and now they have to overcome that. It's really, really hard to believe, especially because I don't think they're expecting Bumgarner back till like the All-Star break. The Cubs, on the other hand, they've stayed relatively healthy. I know Jason Hayward's missed a couple weeks here. Now, you mentioned the Cubs pitching. Now, I would be a little bit, I'm okay with their pitching. Now, of course, they had two long postseason runs the last two seasons, and that is taxing on a lot of these pitchers and probably the hitters as well. So it might take them a little bit while to find their stride here. And the concerns about Jake Arrieta are certainly there with the velocity and everything, and Kyle Hendricks as well. I still do believe in those two, and my barrel flip certainly does not, it doesn't look down on them too much, any of them, really, the main four. John Lester has been on the top 25 leaderboard pretty much the entire season, so Definitely believe in him as well. It's the hitting that has been more puzzling because, yes, I'm around a lot of Cubs fans, and I listen to Chicago sports radio sometimes when I'm in the car, and every caller is talking about how the starting rotation is falling apart and, you know, the sky is falling. But really are not mentioning the hitting. They're not hitting the ball at all. Anthony Rizzo is got an average about 205. Kyle Schwarber's, I think, even below that. Now, both of them, like you mentioned, hit home runs yesterday. Cincinnati's in town. The wind was going out at Wrigley. It certainly was some good home cooking for them. And that's the other difference, though, here. And this certainly has to be mentioned. When we're this early in the season, there can certainly be some weird schedule sample size. I believe the Cubs have faced the hardest schedule in the league so far this season, and now they're on a 10-game homestand against Cincinnati, Milwaukee, and San Francisco. So that might be just what the doctor ordered for these Cubs hitters to start hitting. We saw it last night with the four home runs you mentioned, I believe there's a
well, they got one from Ian Happ, the prospect, which was just kind of, I think, icing on the cake. It was one of those moments where everybody exhaled. They were like, oh, well, right. We even get one from the young guy, you know. All will be well because Ian Happ is here.
Yeah, I was going to mention that Scott Feldman's pitching today, who's, you know, Scott Feldman does not have a large history of being, you know, anything better than an average pitcher. So it is still supposed to be very windy tonight in Chicago. So I'm not sure exactly what direction the wind is blowing in right now, but I would not be surprised if we saw some more home runs and some more barrels out of the Cubs tonight.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, this is a good opportunity to talk about tonight, you know, the daily fantasy angle here for me. You know, you mentioned Jason Vargas, Ervin Santana, and Gerrit Cole. All three of those guys are pitching tonight. Who in your mind of those three is set up for the most success just based on sheer numbers? You know, matchups are, I think, certainly the tough for, you know, for Cole and Vargas going up against the Nats and the Yankees respectively. But I guess my question is of those three guys, who do you feel like is going to have the best chance of success?
You said Vargas, Cole, and which one?
Ervin Santana.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we talked about Vargas facing the Yankees, and I do believe in them. Gerrit Cole has put together quite a nice season here after a little bit of a disappointment last year, but the Nationals are even a better offense than the Yankees as well. Ervin Santana has the Rockies in Coors. Yes. No, never mind. No, it's in Minnesota, so we don't have to worry about the Coors effect. So all three of these guys, I would give my full approval of starting today. But I did mention that the Rockies offense is not that great as far as the barrel numbers go. So and then, of course, they're not in Coors tonight. Ervin Santana, I would expect to be putting up some pretty good numbers today. If you want to just base it off of your opponent, I would go with Ervin Santana. Obviously, another thing with fantasy, you know, is always, one stat that I look at is how many innings pitched per start, you know, their average innings pitched that they're out there. Ervin Santana is at 6.75. So, I mean, he's almost pitching seven innings every single time. If you're getting seven innings of good ball, that's always going to work for you in fantasy. I might be picking Ervin Santana out of these three that you mentioned.
Yeah, that's nice. And I sometimes, when you tweet out the Barrel FIP leaderboard for the day, I will scroll straight to the bottom and look at the guy who's getting absolutely rocked. You know, and I think tonight, no exception, we've got some interesting names down there.
Poor Ubaldo.
Poor Ubaldo. Ubaldo is about to get the JD Martinez treatment, so we know that's going to happen. I don't think the Tigers are going to go quietly after that late loss last night. But we're looking at Ubaldo. He's got a target on his back. But I got to ask about Matt Shoemaker, because I feel like the baseball world is kind of split on this guy. I think a lot of people come to his defense. He's got a decent swinging strike rate. He's got a decent K rate. But, like, the advanced statistics hate this guy, and every single time I look at him, I can't believe in him, right?
I agree, and, you know, my numbers show the same. He's at the bottom of the leaderboard, like you mentioned, or the bottom of the Barrel FIP starters for today. Now, the Chicago White Sox are his opponent today, and the White Sox have certainly not been hitting the ball as well as they did at the beginning of the season. So there is that. If you wanted to be daring just based off the White Sox, you could, but the White Sox certainly have a lot of trouble hitting right-handed pitching. Most of the damage that they've done is against left-handed pitching. So there is that as well. I mean, if you had him, let's say, in a season league and for whatever reason are hanging on to him and you were debating starting him tonight, I could certainly see an argument to do so. But yeah, you mentioned, you know, he's got 22% strikeout rate, which is pretty good. The 12% walk rate is what is, you know, is going to hurt him. But again, the White Sox don't walk much. They're not really on base machines. If you were going to start Matt Shoemaker any game, you know, the White Sox might be the opponent that you want to do. But moving forward, no, I don't like what the numbers are saying about Shoemaker.
Any other guys that you're putting a target on and you're looking at there that the bottom of that barrel fit board and you're saying, oh, geez, he's going to get shelled. We know you Baldos out there, but any other offenses that you feel like could really take advantage of the starter this evening?
Now, Zach Eflin, I'm going to pick on a little bit from the Phillies. He's going against the Rangers today. The Rangers do, I call them the biggest boomer bust offense in the league. They swing hard, and that either leads to big, big blasts or strikeouts. Now, Eflin is not a strikeout pitcher. He is a pitch-to-contact guy, so you're pitching to contact against one of the best teams that can hit the ball really, really far. I know that he has a pretty favorable ERA if you're looking at that, and that's why we don't always look at ERA, because barrel FIP is about 1.7 points lower than his, or I guess higher than his ERA. Worse, we'll just say worse, 1.7 points. It's worse than his ERA. So Zach Eflin is a guy I'd pick on. I know I put Joey Gallo in my lineup this morning.
Yeah, Joey Gallo, man, he's a barrel darling as well. He can get a hold of the ball. If he would slow down on the strikeouts.
Yeah, 40% K rate is going to be a little bit worrisome. But, you know, in fantasy, the home runs are what really, you know, will push you forward. So if you get a couple of those every week from him, you're not going to be complaining.
No, that's right. That's right. Well, hey, Casey, this has been an absolute blast, and, you know, I appreciate you taking the time to come on. Listeners, you can always find Casey's content. I will retweet the Barrel FIP leaderboard on a daily basis, but you can follow Casey at Casey Bogus Law. That's one word, C-A-S-E-Y, Bogus, B-O-G-U-S-L-A-W, correct, Casey? One word, no caps, no spaces?
That's all correct. Yep.
And where else can people find your content?
robaseball.com. Our Twitter handle is robaseballmlb. I have a podcast myself at the Read Optional MLB Show. And then, of course, MLB Barrel Alert. We will be, we're going right now. It's a 1 o'clock in the afternoon here, and there are two games going on. And we have our guys tweeting out the barrels right now. So go ahead and give that a follow.
That's awesome. Yeah, if you're not following Barrel Alert, follow Barrel. There's nothing more gratifying than seeing those barrels pop up on your phone when you have that guy in fantasy or daily fantasy. So I always look forward to getting those pushed to my phone. And hey, you were right about Josh Tomlin, by the way. Rays got to Tomlin, got him out of there in the fourth, I think.
No, really I was wrong. I was against. I was all for Josh Tomlin today.
Were you really?
Yes. I started him in fantasy. I guess that got missed the translation. No, I will eat crow. The Rays are very, very hot right now, and I apologize for giving you guys the go-ahead on Tomlin, but if it makes you feel better, he was in my lineup today as well. So, yeah, that one hurt.
That is funny. Hey, man. The Rays have made many a pitcher who is who's supposed to feel good about himself look pretty silly.
Corey Dickerson and Logan Morrison, go out and get those guys. They're hitting so well right now. Both lefties, both can't really hit lefties, but Logan Morrison hit a home run off Chris Sale this weekend.
Yeah, Corey Dickerson, I think, is like top 10 in wins above replacement as far as bats go. Really, really impressive. I heard that via Fangraphs not long ago. Anyway, enough about the Rays. Although I could talk about them for a while. Casey, I appreciate you coming on, my friend. Guys, check out RO Baseball. Check out Casey Bogislaw on Twitter. Of course, MLB Barrel Alert on Twitter as well. An absolute must follow for DFS players, fantasy baseball junkies, and just baseball fans in general. Casey, it's been an absolute blast. I appreciate you coming on, my friend.
Thanks so much for having me, Sean. Anytime.
All right. Take care.